It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Sick Podcast Recruits Draftcast. There's about a month left to the season, so I think it's time for our first mock draft. We have the, you know, NHL tankathon going on, and the boys prepared their first mock draft. Obviously, subject to change, right? It's still March, but I think it should be a lot of fun to talk about. As always, we're going to get to Rocco's Riser of the Week a little bit later. Grant has his own Prospect of the Week. And for our Habs fans, you know we have to do, right? Habs Prospect of the Week coming up. Let's get to it.
Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to the Sick Podcast. Sick Podcast. Recruits Draftcast.
And with the first overall selection in the 2023 NHL Draft, the Chicago Blackhawks are very proud to select from the Regina Pats, the Western Hockey League, Connor Bedard.
The sickest NHL draft and scouting podcast. It's gonna be sick.
All right, producer Shane here, as always, joined by my fantastic co-hosts, Grant McCagg, Rocco Zappia. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Great. How are you guys doing?
Can't complain.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Awesome. Guys, this is exciting, right? A lot of people are asking for it. I know Craig Button released his first mock draft. We're just gonna do the top 10. Obviously, we're not gonna do all seven rounds because we'd be here till tomorrow. But the top 10 so far, if we can bring up the current odds, just real quick, from this is coming from NHL Tankathon. San Jose Sharks, obviously, with the greatest odds, 25% of getting first overall. And the way it's looking, I think they'll finish dead last, 40 points right now. 7 points ahead of them is the Chicago Blackhawks with 13.5% odds of getting first. After that, you have Anaheim and Columbus. I think that top four is pretty solidified. I don't think Arizona, Montreal, or Ottawa is going to fall that low. And then those three are kind of in that interchangeable section there. One point separating the three teams. And then Seattle, Buffalo, and Calgary rounding out the top 10. So who wants the honors? Who wants to go first and give us their top 10 mocked? No takers?
I'll go first. Yeah, Rocco doesn't seem to be jumping off.
I was going to let you decide. Sometimes you like to put me on the spot, and sometimes you like to just go for it first. So.
Yeah. Well,
you win the coin toss. You pick.
I'll put you on the spot whether I go first or not. So, yeah, sure, I'll do it.
All right. Let's look at Grant's top 10 here.
Funny thing about that, you notice that there was 1% difference between like 5, 6, 7 of getting the first pick. And it's funny, like today somebody was, I was saying about fretting about whether Arizona finishes ahead of Montreal or not, right? Look at the difference in the odds. Mm-hmm. 1%. Oh, and somebody tweeted out, well, you got a better chance of 1% better chance. So you're gonna fret over finishing one spot behind Ottawa or Arizona over 1%. Just whatever happens, happens. And if they end up winning the draft lottery with the odds being either 8.5% or 7.5 or 6.5, the odds aren't high with any of the three. So
that's it.
You know, whatever will be. I know people like to, worry about, we can't finish. Ottawa's got to finish. It really doesn't make a lot of difference. And when we bring my list there, you'll see why. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, those guys are probably picking defensemen anyways, right, Rocco?
We'll see.
Grant, you know, I ran the simulation before we jumped on, and Columbus actually won that one. So anything is possible, but we are assuming that the rankings stay the same, right? So we're going as if San Jose won the lottery and so on. So let's Trevor, take a look at Grant's top 10.
It would be kind of cool if Columbus won it after what the kerfuffle last year, right?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, you know, they got Fantilli. Like, Fantilli's good.
No, but I mean, what happened with at the draft lottery and when
Kevin Weeks and all that, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was kind of a letdown for those guys. And I think it's because they were really despondent because they thought, oh, this kills our chance of getting Fantilli. And then they ended up getting him anyway. So again, don't be too worried about where your team ends up in drafting, because you might end up getting the best player anyways. So, you know. That's the fun of the draft. Okay, bring her up. Let's go.
Let's do it. Oh, it's going to make some waves.
Believe it or not, I've got Celebrini going number one.
Shocker.
Obviously, you know, San Jose, they could use help anywhere. But I think for most people, Celebrini is pretty much the consensus number one pick. So they're going to go. And people might say, well, you know, they've got Will Smith, you want to one, either you have the 1-2 punch of Celebrini and Smith, or to be honest with you, I've always thought that Will Smith at the end of the day ends up being a winger anyway. I don't think he'd be the number one center over Celebrini down the road.
No.
Do you want him? Do you want a top four pick to be on your second line? Probably not. So you take Celebrini and you might end up putting Smith on the wing, on his wing. What a dynamic pair those two would be. I mean, Celebrini would be the defensive conscience because Smith's going to need that. You know, he's not a defense first forward by any means. And you just, you know, you build around that with Eriksson on the other side. That has the potential to be just a terrific first line down the road for San Jose. So I sort of hope that they win the lottery if it's not Montreal or Ottawa. Hey, Rocco.
We're due.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. But, you know, Ottawa's the reason why there's a draft lottery to begin with. When they tanked for Daigle that year. They ended up, they shouldn't have tanked because they would have ended up with a better player with Pronger at two anyway, but it was because of that.
No one remembers second overall.
Yeah, exactly. Because of that obvious tank they did that year, they changed it up so that there was a draft lottery. So, yeah, you know, karma is a bitch, as they say. But now I've got Demidov going to Chicago. Ugh. And I just picture Bedard and two most skilled players, maybe arguably in the last few drafts, going back to back to Chicago, throw them together on a line and just watch. How exciting would that be? Those two, that dynamic pairing on a top line down the road, just skill out the yin yang, as they would say. So, I mean, that to me would be a no-brainer. The Chicago takes the winger that can be a number one winger on any team, I think, down the road. Now it starts to get interesting. Anaheim is so loaded on defense. They love Zellweger and think that he can run their power play down the road and has the offensive chops to be a power play quarterback. You know, they have some smaller skilled guys back there. Will they take Perek anyways? Maybe. But, you know, you can't go wrong Caden Lindstrom anywhere from 2 to 5, I think, is where he'll go. Typically, an almost goal per game, 6'3", fast, gritty center goes top 3. So by no means would, it'd be a stretch for them to take him at three. They have, you know, they have some guys. I think we discussed this a couple of weeks ago where, you know, there's a mix there, but not necessarily a lot of gritty guys in their top six, aside from McTavish. But, and, you know, they're bringing in Cutter Gauthier too. But you add Lindstrom and those three guys to build around as far as the size, grit, everything, you know, then you have Carlson. I don't know if you keep Zegras. You might even keep him because you'd have such a nice mix. There's just they, you know, they would be building one of the best young top sixes by far in the league if they were to snag Lindstrom. Because I really think they have a great base already on defense. And then you've got Columbus. I can't see them passing on Parekh. I think it's the perfect choice for them. I think Rocco, I had a quick look at his mock, and he seems to think that, no, they're, you know, they're going to go another way. And I think I know why he's thinking that way. It's called wishful thinking. But
You're not going to be able to argue with who I have there for Columbus, I don't think.
Yeah, well, we'll see. who's their power play quarterback of the future? Columbus.
Juracek?
No.
That's it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
That's so it. You're a little silent there, Rocco. But anyway, it's going to be
stealing my thunder here. I'm just trying
it's going to it's gonna be Zane Parekh. See, well, you should have gone first. Now, see,
that's okay.
You could have explained. No. Anyway, that you know, Werenski is a good power play quarterback now, but you draft for 2 to 3 years down the road typically, and you know at that point. You know, the way things happen in Columbus, everyone leaves, it seems like, you know, and Werenski will eventually leave. But, I mean, 2 to 3 years from now, Parekh's run here, power play. You know, you have some nice pieces, young pieces and drafts up front that they've made recently. I think that they would take Parekh at four.
That's me hearing Parekh off the board fourth overall.
That's it.
Exactly. We got a dog barking here. Chester, go lie down.
Yeah, Chester okay. Wants to chime in.
Yeah, he's
got some strong feelings about
like,
Parekh.
He doesn't like the next pick there, Buham going to Arizona. But again, Arizona, who's their power play quarterback of the future?
Maverick Lamoureux. What's that? Maverick Lamoureux. Like that's
yeah, exactly.
That's about it, right?
Yeah, well, no.
Not anymore.
No. Lamoureux's not an offensive defenseman. He's gonna be a shutdown. 6'7"
Which is why they need a defense. Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, I love your French pronunciations. They're way better than mine. I'm going to try to pick it up because I got a bit of grief from the last show. maybe you could, pronounce French names a little better, but I'll never be in your league with that. Now, Arizona drafted a bunch of bunch of good forwards lately. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've got a few coming in the pipeline, but Simashev is not an offensive defenseman. Let's get that straight right now. I mean, look at his stats this year, last year. He's just not going to be a power. I don't think he'll even be on the power play down the road, maybe second unit. So I think Bewham can run a power play at the NHL level. And in Arizona, I think it's a gimme that he would be a perfect fit for them. I like him going to Arizona at five. The next one, well, yeah, there might be some backlash on this one. I'll have to try to explain myself here, but I think for me, there's a clear tier difference between the top defensemen that if it's three forwards to go 1, 2, 3, for me, the next six or five best players are defensemen. Mm-hmm. And as much as I like Kattin and Iginla, I think Yakimchuk is the better NHL prospect. He's got more value, and you have to take the best asset. Now, does that mean that Yakimchuk ends up playing for the Canadiens? It's a possibility he gets traded in the next 2 years. Now, you know, why would you make a draft pick to trade him? Well, because in the next 2 years, Montreal wants to contend. And they have the young pieces that are coming up that it's all kind of in place for that. So if you draft Kattin or Iginla, are they in your top six in 2 years? Probably not. They're going to be at least 3 years before their top six NHL forwards. Well, you speed up the process if you trade Yakimchuk or Mayu, or, you know, Barron and Yakimchuk, Barron and Mayu, to get that top six forward that's going to plug in there, that's going to help you win in 2 years' time, that's already developed, that's already a top six NHL player. And, you know, along with the other young defense they have, it's just you're contending in 2 years as opposed to having to wait for that another year or two for the guy that you pick, the forward that you pick, to be at the point where they're, you know, a legitimate top six forward. Also, you look at the cap space, like Montreal, if they took Yakimchuk, I think he's playing in 2 to 3 years. Mayu's playing. You know, they've got Hudson. You could have potentially four of your top six that are on entry-level contracts on defense. And then, you know, the other two defensemen or three defensemen, they could be taking up less than $15 million of your cap. Mm-hmm. Well, that leaves $70 million for goalies, or $70 million plus for goalies and forwards. It allows you, affords you the luxury of going after any free agent or any player in the trade, no matter what their salary. And I mean, going for the big fish. There leaves them loads of space to get whoever they want for their top six up front. If they draft another defenseman and they have three or four on entry-level contracts in 2 to 3 years. So there are a lot of reasons why. I mean, you look at, you know, what asset did they use to get Doc? A young defenseman that they just drafted, Romanov. They have so much asset value that you pick them and you're picking them for 2 to 3 years down the road. Well, who knows what the roster looks like in 2 to 3 years? It's always changes. Like I remember you doing, you know, you're doing lineups for 2 to 3 years down the road. Like 3-4 years ago, it's nothing like what anyone predicted.
Nope.
Montreal's lineup would be like 2 or 3 years down the road. So you don't, you know, a position that's really strong now is not necessarily going to be the case in 2 to 3 years through trades, through players disappointing, through other players coming up and beating out guys that you think are going to be good for spots. So best asset available, I think at six, if, you know, for my money, is Yakimchuk. Mm-hmm. 30 goal scorer, the last one to score 30 goals in his draft year in the WHL was Ian White, I think 22 years ago. So it's been a long time. He's one of the best defensemen to come out of the dub in years. Like, you know, I think he's a great prospect, and I think he'd be a great asset to pick up. And, wow, I mean, that right side with – if they did end up keeping Mayhew, Reinbacher, and Yakimchuk,
oh,
they'd have the best, you know, young right defense core in the league by far.
Easily.
You win – you know, you look back at the big three, right? That they were such a key to Montreal's Stanley Cup wins. New Jersey, how were they able to win cups those years? Wasn't their offense. It was around Stevenson, Niedermeyer, you know, that fantastic defense core that they had.
Brian Rafalski.
And Rafalski, for sure. And, I mean, you can go down the route. They had White. They had just a great
Ken Danico,
exactly. They were just, you know, why did Vegas win a cup last year? That defense core. If you've got the best defense core in the league, you are a contender year in, year out. And if Montreal drafts Yakimchuk, there's no doubt in my mind that 2-3 years down the road, whoever the sixth defenseman end up being could be the best group in the league. So those are my reasons. I know it's, you know, it goes beyond the, you know, people tend to look at it and say, well, they don't need that. But Nashville didn't need Seth Jones when they had Ekholm, Weber, Ellis, Josie. But he was the best asset at fourth overall.
Yep.
And they drafted him. And he never even, you know, they turned around and traded him like within 2 years for Ryan Johansson to fill that first line center spot. I mean, he didn't end up being a great first line center, but Johansson was a top four pick that was highly regarded at the time. Yeah. Montreal will take the best player available, just like they thought they did last year too. And you go from there. I think that's long enough. I think I may have spent a little more time talking about Montreal than the first few teams there. Now Ottawa, Lev Shunov, right defenseman, big, mobile. They need help on defense, I think, on the right side, and it's a great fit. Even though I maybe, you know, I have them a couple spots lower than that. The value is high. The need is, you know, he's going somewhere between 3 and 10. So for all I know, Ottawa has him third on their list. And if he's there at 7, they'll run to the, you know, to the podium to pick him. But I mean, asset wise, that's 7's a fair spot for him. And it fills a need for them, I think. They've got a lot of nice pieces up front. I don't know that they would go for a forward at 7. I think Lev Shunov's the guy for them if he's there. Seattle, they're going to need. I see them taking a defenseman. You know, they've picked a lot of forwards with their high picks in recent years. They don't really have that stud all-around defenseman, young defenseman to build around. And if, you know, whether it's Lev Shunov or Dickinson or maybe even Saleyev, he's the other consideration there, obviously. But I think they could use a guy that Dickinson would be given offensive opportunity there that he might not get in other places, and he can provide some offense for them. Perhaps even run their power play. He may not be an elite power play guy, but he would get the minutes, the opportunity in Seattle to become their point getting defenseman. And hopefully he develops into the all around, you know, two way defenseman that will log 25 minutes a game in Seattle. I think that's a great fit for them. Buffalo just traded Mittelstadt. Thompson took a step back this year. I think Cousins, people were starting. I know in his draft year, a lot of my good friends thought that his offensive upside is limited. And I think we're seeing this year that, you know, maybe he's not. I don't think that he ideally is a number one center on your team. Catton, he might fill that void. Like a team like Buffalo, they've got Östlund, obviously, who I think is great and will be great. But add one more really skilled offensive forward to that mix. They picked up Byram, you know, to go with Power and Samuelson and Dahlin. So will they take Salayev? I don't know. I think Salayev is dropping some. We didn't see a lot of offense from him in the second half of the year. The Russian factor, his ice time went down. He may not end up getting picked in the top 10, but I don't know that Buffalo wants to add another defenseman. I think Catton, at the end of the day, could end up being their best offensive forward, whether it be, you know, he may end up being on the wing, but I don't know that they can pass on a guy that potentially could end up being their top scorer down the road, especially after they just traded Mittelstadt. I think there's a need there. Calgary, well, you know,
fitting,
I have to really explain that one. I think that would be a great, Ginla, Calgary. It just makes sense for a lot of reasons. They could use a goal scorer. They could use an all around winger. And just the fact that you could continue the Ginla legacy, right, in the same city, it just makes, for me, he's the best pick at 10, if not at 10 and 11. If he's there, I don't see Calgary passing on him. I mean, Craig Conroy's the GM. Did he play with Jerome? Yes, right? I think it's the perfect fit in so many ways. That would be my selection if I'm Calgary at 10th overall. So that, early mock draft, that's the way I'm leaning, and those would be my picks.
Fantastic. Yeah, and getting at 10 Calgary would be pretty special. Hopefully they bring Jerome in just in case, you know. Hey, let's say it's time and he's still in the stands. Well, bring him in and make the pick, right?
Get him to announce the pick. Get him to announce the pick. Yeah, that would be just. Yeah, too bad it wouldn't. Too bad it's not in Calgary, but hey, can't have everything.
Well, yeah. Anyways, this is fair. So, Rocco, your time to shine. Let's do it.
Well, do you have any comments on that list there?
Grant, you ran through that perfectly. You explained every pick, and honestly, if that's how it turned out, I wouldn't even be surprised.
Thank you. Yeah. What about you, Rocco? You got any?
No, I think a lot of it's pretty interchangeable. And I think the differences between our lists, I think I've said this before, you put the names in a blender and pull them out, you know what I mean? Whatever order they're in could just be how they go. I think it's going to be really, really one of the more exciting drafts, because there is one really big tier of players there, right up to number 12 or even 13, sort of, depending who you ask. There's after number one and two, even after one, it's wide open, really.
Yeah.
Depending who you ask, you're gonna get a different answer. I know me and Grant agree that there's a top two and then the rest, but it's gonna be fun. Let's get to mine and I'll explain the differences as we go here.
Sure,
let's do it.
Much like Grant, San Jose number one, Macklin Celebrini. I agree that Smith's better suited on the wing. You got a true number one center there. Make the pick. Don't think about it too hard, and just get on with the rest of the draft. I think that's the way the first pick's going to go here. After that, it gets interesting. Chicago with Demidov, and I almost went a different direction because of the Russian thing, and there are so many guys. But then I just pictured him playing with Connor Bedard, and I said, no, this is what is meant to happen, and that would be two thirds of probably the best line in the NHL when they're in their prime. You know what I mean? Once McDavid and McKinnon are a little bit older and these guys are in their prime, that could easily be the number one line in hockey. And that could be Chicago did pretty well building around a center and a winger last time. Yeah. I know they had Keith Seabrook and you know, they're going to need to add those guys again too, but Kane and Taves were the face from day one. And it's a good recipe. I mean, Demidov's is skilled. He's probably the most skilled player in the draft, I think. Maybe the only guy in the draft that could be a consistent 100-point type player. And you put two guys who could get 100 points independently on the same line, and all of a sudden you're looking at 120 plus. I mean, they could be as good as McDavid and whoever winger of the day he's playing with. McDavid, Hyman, McDavid, Draisaitl, some occasions. McKinnon, Rantanen, Kucherov, Point. These guys all are the best players in the league. So I do think that Bedard and Demidov could form that same lethal combination that would just be absolutely must watch hockey.
You don't think that Hyman? You think Hyman deserves that spot on the first line? No, I'm just kidding. We won't get into that conversation.
Scored 50 goals. He might make Team Canada. Yeah. He might be on Team Canada. Like, he might be. So I don't know. Kunitz did fine with Crosby. You still got to finish. Oh, no.
I was kidding. It's a hot topic right now. I know.
Well, and Hyman will probably be the first one to say he doesn't have 100-point natural skill and ability, but can't. I'm never going to say a bad word about a guy who worked that hard to get where he is and having the kind of success that he has. I'm a huge Zach Hyman fan. Massive, yep. Amongst a very long list of mistakes that Toronto made letting that guy go, especially when he wanted to stay. Come on, it's exactly what you guys think.
We're all on board with that for sure.
So
we agree 100%.
Number three here. This is the one name that me and Grant have different in our top tens, and I have them all the way up at number three, which just, and I bet you don't even think it would be that crazy. It is so wide open. And you spoke a lot about Anaheim building around the size, and you had Lindstrom there, and I get that. That was, I toyed with that back and forth a lot, but Anaheim does have a massive cupboard of really strong defensemen, but not too many teams have a guy that's 6'7" that can skate like that and can move the puck like that and can defend like that. And maybe, you know what, maybe he's not going to be a number one power play guy at the NHL, but that's fine. But what he might be is 26 to 28 minutes a night in the playoffs, playing against the other team's best players in the league, shutting them down and being an absolute force and a guy that might have some hardware by the end of his career. And I'm talking about some team hardware. I really do believe in building a big mobile back end. I do think that is an absolute key to success in the NHL right now. And the offense be damned. It's tough. It's just tough to pass up a guy with that much upside. He's the draft's unicorn sort of for a reason. And yet he didn't put up a ton of points the second half of the year, hardly at all. He might not be a first power play guy. He might be stuck up in the, you know where, Russia, who knows where, somewhere in Russia. But man, you watch him and that combination of skating ability and size and ability to handle men already as a teenager in what's probably the second best league in the world. He would fit really nice amongst a squad of very large Anaheim Ducks that's going to be coming up together. And That's might be scary in the West. The Western Conference is known for building big, strong teams, and those Ducks, man, keep an eye on them if they can add a big guy like that to their arsenal. Columbus at number four. This is why I said you won't disagree with me, because you had him at number three. So Columbus taking Caden Lindstrom. I think him and Fantilli down the middle would just be something that most teams would just drool over. You know what I mean? And yes, you're right. They don't have that future number one power play quarterback yet. And maybe I got a little selfish with where I put a certain guy, but we'll get there. I do think Lindstrom would be a fantastic fit for Columbus, especially with how Fantilli has looked since he's gotten the league. You know, Lindstrom's been hurt, and there may be a little debate if he projects as a true number one or as a real high end number two. But with Fantilli there, it's not going to matter as much, because you have a guy that can fill that opposite role. You can have him 1-2 in either order, and I think that's something that. That a lot of teams would be envious of down the middle, and it's not a bad place to start building your team. Arizona, Levshinov. This is where Grant's going to start giving me hell, because he knows I put the three righties in the complete opposite order that I actually have them personally, which is whatever. It's my mock draft. I'm going to do what I want. Levshinov, Arizona. They've dipped in. I know he's Belarusian, but you know they've dipped into that Russian pool a couple times over the last couple of years, and they're going to get a Russian with bells on to join Joy Simashev and but another big defenseman, mobile, very very projectable, because he's got the size and the skating and the puck movement ability. And there are some questions there. It's like someone unplugs his controller at times. I don't know what he's thinking, but a lot of the times he looks real, real good. I don't know that he's going to be a number one power play guy, but I think he might be a guy that could play on both special teams and play 22 plus minutes a night. And I do think there's a little bit of safety there because he has that high end size and skating combination. There's a little bit of safety there, and go to Arizona and fit in with the other guys. They like to surprise people with their picks a little bit. So why not take Levshinov ahead of the other two and go with that trend, which brings me to Montreal.
Whoa.
And honestly with Montreal, because of Hudson, I don't know that Yakimchuk isn't the best fit for them anyways. Of anyone, honestly, in this top 10, Yakimchuk might be. And I know Montreal's loaded on defense and everyone's going to see out, but you know what? Look what defensemen get when they're traded. Like, there's nothing bad. If you just drafted the best defenseman available with every single pick you had and just relied on being able to trade for forwards, aside from a number one center, you'd probably be able to do it, honestly. Skill wingers are all friggin' dime a dozen these days. Unless they're the truly, truly elite ones. So don't give me hell for putting Demidov too and then chirping the value of wingers, because that's different because he's a freak. But you know, you look at a lot of skill wingers and you can get top six wingers for not that much in a trade. And what can't you get in a trade? It's a 6'3", 200 whatever pound right-handed defenseman who can blow guys up and rip slap shots and stick handle like he's 5'9". And so there is massive, massive value there. And if Montreal is trying to take that step to the more competitive tier over the next year or two, what would you rather have in your back pocket than about a half dozen guys who project as top four defensemen? Like, you're going to be able to fill your team out. That's what a GM is for, to fill the team out, to make trades, to make signings. You know, your scouts are there to draft the best player available, draft players that fit the identity of what the team is going to be, but also you're drafting guys that have trade value, because not every guy that gets drafted plays his career with the team that drafted him. A lot don't. They get moved. So you get a guy with that kind of skill set, and worst case, you have a 6'3" right-handed defenseman who projects as a top second pair guy at worst. first pair guy, maybe if he hits all the way. So I think you're doing okay there. And yet you have small skill in Montreal. You have it. So I do think they need to get a little bit bigger. I do think that is something that they've struggled with both, you know, they draft a little bit small and their team's a little bit small and get some size back there, beef it up. He's a heck of a player, man. I think Montreal fans would learn to really love this guy if they gave him a chance to just be who he is and not who they felt should have been instead, sort of thing. That brings me to Ottawa, and maybe we could probably flip flop errors. If I'm being more realistic, maybe you flip Arizona and Montreal or Arizona and Ottawa here, and that makes a little more sense. But I don't care. Like I said, it's my mock draft, and I'm a Sens fan, and I want Zane Parekh. And as far as at least one draft goes, which is this one, we're gonna take Zane Parekh in Ottawa and pair him with Jake Sanderson for a quick decade, and I'm just gonna have to get season tickets, and because that'd just be a lot of fun. I've talked enough about him, so I'm gonna move on because we've been going on here, and I've spoken about him at length throughout mm-hmm. the season. It's no secret how much I love Zane Parekh, and oh, he would look damn good in red and black. I'll tell you guys that. Seattle,
Eric Carlson
could be.
That's who they get. That's who he gets compared to. So it would be kind of cool if they if they got the next one.
Yeah, I don't mind that comparison. At all.
Offensively, you know.
Offensively, yeah, okay, good. Yeah, we can move on there. I think Parekh cares a lot more about defense. Not saying he's better, he cares a lot more about it. Seattle, I agree with Grant there. They need they need a guy who can they need a defenseman who can come and be a top four. And I think Boyum does project as a guy who can run an NHL power play. Now, does he become an absolutely elite number one power play quarterback like the Hughes and the McCars? Maybe not. Maybe. Who knows? But maybe he projects somewhere like a guy that's a capable guy, maybe like a Werenski in Columbus, since you brought his name up earlier. You know, not in the top five power play quarterbacks, but certainly more than capable of running a successful power play. In the NHL, I think he'd be a nice fit there for Seattle. Buffalo, I think would be very, very, very happy if Sam Dickinson fell to number nine and they were able to get him there. Buffalo has done, as far as I'm concerned, a superb job of drafting the last few years. I really like every year. The last 4 or 5 years, anyways. Since they picked Mittelstadt, because I didn't love that pick, but after that, every year I look at the end of the draft, I'm like, oh, okay, but Buffalo seems to just, and maybe we're both wrong, but they take guys that I seem to like, so I'm gonna obviously like their picks, and they've done a nice job of drafting some high end skill. I think they could add a high quality defense prospect to their prospect pool. They do have some really high quality forwards coming up, but their top defensemen, by and large, are in the league already. And yet they did add Byram, and they got Power and Aline and Samuelson. But you get a chance to add a guy with not many holes who projects as a very, very, very safe bet to develop to the majority of his potential and take up a top four role for a pretty long time in the league. Sometimes you just don't overthink it. And if you can get a number, depending who you ask, Dickinson projects anywhere between a number two and a number four defenseman. I think 2-3 is similar, but I mean, he could be a first or second pair. You get that at number nine, you're pretty pumped about that. And you make the pick and say, thanks Everin for leaving him to me. And you move on. Calgary. Yeah. I mean, there's maybe guys that get picked ahead of Iginla, but just like Otto and Parekh, it's my mock draft. I'm going to do what I want. Again, led to Calgary would just be cool. I'm not going to not put him there. Legacy pick, call it what you want, but it's not just that. He is deserving of being in consideration, and I don't think he's a lock to be in the top 10. I really don't. I think there's probably eight guys who are locks to be in the top 10. I don't think he's one of them, but I do think he is someone who deserves to be a top 10 pick and would be most years. And if he falls just outside of it, I don't think it'll be too far before someone calls his name. But tough not to put the name of Ginla beside the word Calgary. That's just, oh, it'd be so much fun to watch that all over. Yeah. And maybe they don't pick him for that reason. You don't want to put that pressure of coming in when your dad is, you know, has statues of your dad outside the rink. You know what I mean? Maybe that's something to consider. Maybe he goes the other way and wants to carve his own path. And that might be something that happens as well. But for the sake of the mock draft and for the entertainment of, and for the sake of dialing back the clock 20 years and getting to watch, you know, and again, running around in a Flames jersey, I think that'd be pretty cool. So we're gonna send TJ Ginla to the Calgary Flames, and that'll be my top 10 for now. Fantastic. I'm gonna change it 5 more times before the draft.
It's yep. only March, right? We're at the end of March, and the draft is in late June, so still plenty of time for it to change, and the rankings, right? So we still haven't seen the draft lottery. We don't know who's picking first. We don't know who's moving up or down. But as it stands, end of March, this is what it's looking like. Grant, I feel like you have some comments about that.
Yeah, no, you can't argue with, you know, it. What's great is all of those guys are good players. Absolutely. And wherever they go, it's going to be a good pick. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't argue with any of those, really. I mean, if any of those players end up going to those teams, they're going to make them better. So you can say, oh, no way. You know, the only one that obviously that seeing that I didn't have him in the mock draft and you had him 3 would be Soleyev, but you know, you made good arguments for it. And he could go anywhere from 3 to 12, you know, really. And
he's the wild card of that top group. For yeah. me. Sorry to cut you off there, but I toyed with him. Like, I didn't know what to do with him. Because no GM's going to get to see him live. And that's
freaking well, great. The other thing too, you know, I'm talking to some scouts like, geez, you know, like even Demidov, as good as he is, do you pick him top 2 having never seen him live? It's tough, but there's just so much skill there. I don't see, you know, it's going to be tough to pass on him because you might be passing on a 100-point score. You know, he's every bit more skilled than Kucherov, and
yeah,
Kucherov's leading the friggin' league in scoring. So,
the thing I meant to mention about Soleyev, one of the reasons I did end up putting him quite a bit higher, I looked at a few drafts of defensemen who were maybe not projected to go quite as high as they did. They went a little bit early than the quote unquote experts had suggested and the things that they had in common. A little bit bigger, pretty projectable. Questions about the offensive ceiling. Simashev last year went higher than people thought he might. Sider to Detroit went higher than people thought that he might. Reinbacher to Montreal went a little higher than people thought that he might. And they're all different players. So I don't want to say that these are comparables, but defensemen that are big, they can skate, they're projectable. Those other guys maybe didn't have the Russian factor. Simashev did, but there's some will, I think, and some desire on the parts of scouts and GMs and teams to really, if you can get something solid that you know is going to fit into your top 4 on the back end for a very long time. I do find that teams have a hard time passing that up.
Yeah.
Well, and the history has shown, if you look back at history, you know, should Gudbranson have gone, you know, the big defenseman that can skate, should he have gone top 3?
Certainly
should
not.
Should Dylan McIlrath gone in the top 10? Griffin Reinhart, 4th overall defenseman, big. Should he have? You know, I think there'll be teams that say, okay, we have overvalued that big defensive defenseman in the past. So why, you know, should we take him there? And I think people that are going to be looking at Simashev are going to be saying, he shouldn't have gone. You know, I've looked at him this year and I think Arizona may end up regretting that pick, but we'll see. Time will tell. I mean, yeah, they end up going higher than they expected, but what does that mean that they were the right picks is, I think, the more important thing. But
And that's why he's the wild card of that.
Yeah, top. No, he is. He is. And also the Russian factor. So who knows exactly. But just from what I'm hearing, I think his stock's dropped a bit. But again, we'll see. You know, Bob in his midterms had him. Some teams thought that he was he might be the first overall. So it'll be very interesting with him. He's a true wild card. And I mean, I looked at Anaheim and.
It only takes you know, one.
They've got Tyson Hines, Noah Warren. Noah Warren especially is the big defenseman that just a fantastic skater that I think they already have a damn good one in the system. And I think for that reason, I don't know that, you know, there's a huge need for Soleyev, especially when you could have Lindstrom in your lineup. Or even Parekh. Like I think Lindstrom and Parekh would be guys that they would take over Soleyev, but we'll see. You know, long way to the draft, and again, you can't argue like those guys go where you have them to any team that they're gonna help the team, they're gonna make the team better. So you can't argue with any of them, I don't think.
That's it. All right. Well, that wraps up this portion of the show. Let us know in the comments what you thought about their top 10. Let them hear it. Let them hear it. If you have any comments, concerns, questions, throw it in the comments. But well, please be respectful, right? There's no need for any insults. We're all having fun.
It is interesting. Oh, sorry, Shane. It is interesting that I do believe the only guy outside of the top two that we had going to the same team was Yakimchuk. Is that correct?
And Eginla,
but that was a no-brainer. But
four,
I mean,
four out of ten.
Three,
Grant, I'll ask you, like, because this was the difference that we had. Grant McKegg is GM of the next expansion team, and you get your first round pick. The top group is gone. You're down to two guys. You got to pick between Berkeley Cotton and Anti Soleyev. Who's Grant McKegg taking?
Expansion team?
For your team or whoever. You're building your franchise.
Oh, expansion team would be Cotton.
And say you're picking
he's gonna be their first line center.
Yeah.
So Cotton's
I don't think Soleyev will be on either power play. Like there's very little offensive upside there. It'd be Cotton.
All right. So Rocco, I think it's time Rocco's riser. And I don't even know if we can call him a riser because this guy's been mocked in the top 15 for quite some time, but you would like to highlight a certain Mr. Consta Hellenius. Let's have a look.
Rocco's ringer.
We can call him that.
So we got Consta Hellenius, number 91 there on your screen, plays for Ucharit Mikkeli. I said that terribly, but that's who he plays for in my pronunciation, in Liiga in Finland. So he's been playing against men all season. Little smaller, 5'11", 180 pounds. Not the smallest, not the biggest, obviously, but a really, really, really just good two-way center. He's got 14 goals, 36 points in 51 games played in Liiga this season. So that's his 0.71 points per game. As far as 17-year-old seasons go in Liiga, that ranks him, as far as recent players anyways, it ranks him just behind Granlund, Barkov, Kakko, and Laine, but it ranks him ahead of Lekkonen, Armia, Kemmel, Puljujärvi, Lundell, Kotkaniemi, and Teravainen. So just to give you a bit of a background where his points at least would rank among draft eligible players in that men's league historically. His effort's a plus. I like what he brings, shift in, shift out. He doesn't really dog it ever, I don't find. He's always going and he does it at both ends. I think he really does take some pride in his defensive game. He's not just an offensive point producing forward. Playmaking in terms of the skills, the playmaking is quite good. I think he has pretty good vision here. more of a passer than a shooter, but he is quite shifty in his place. He's good at opening up lanes. He's good at seeing guys that maybe snuck open into coverage a little bit. So you really like that. Like I mentioned, defensive play is quite good. He was a turnover machine in this particular game. So I should mention this game that you're seeing here. This is the reason I picked this game. This is a playoff game. They were down 3-0 in this series, so they're facing elimination, do or die game for them. And he stepped up. He stepped up massive. He had 3 assists in this game, and honestly, he should have had 6 points. He should have had 4 assists, and he should have had 2 goals. And you'll see in the highlights there are a couple goals he could have had that he just missed. So guy stepping up in the playoffs against men. I don't want to say putting the team on his back, but he did stand out in this game, and he's a 17-year-old player down 3-0 in a playoff series. So that kind of stood out, and that is the reason why Grant pointed that out to me, how he was like, hey, this guy's having a real good playoff series here. You might want to look at him for this week. So he really did stand out. I talked about his playmaking and his vision. He's got really good puck skills to go with that. He's not at the same level as a Demidov or a guy like that. He might not wow you really with the individual skill, but it is really, really, really good, more than capable. And again, with the good vision, he makes smart plays that actually will translate. You may not see him do a Michigan, but the kind of plays where he, you know, moves a stick to create a lane or takes one stride to create a lane, like those are the kind of things that will translate. And he does those things very, very well. His skating, I like his skating. His edges and his quickness are very good, I find. He does a good job using his edges to kind of turn off guys, buy himself a little bit of space. I think
leave him out by himself.
What's that?
Yeah.
Yeah, what?
Go ahead. Oh, I've got dogs.
Okay. All right.
We've got dogs going here. I thought I was muted. Sorry.
That's okay. His skating. So his edges and quickness. He does a good job using his edges and quickness to buy himself time and space. And I think growing up a smaller player, he learned how to maneuver and get himself some free ice. There's a goal that he should have had. He deked the goalie, absolutely put the goalie's jockstrap in the rafters. Too bad he just missed the net. That would have been a really nice one. But his top speed is above average. He's not a true burner, but I mean, he's a good skater. He's not the fastest player in the world, but it's certainly a plus asset for him. Shot's good enough. Again, I don't think he's going to be a 40-50 goal scorer at the NHL, but he is going to be able to contribute. And you know, when he has an opening, he can get a shot off. It'll be good enough for the next level. But again, I do think he is more of a playmaker than a goal scorer. Anyways, for me, I like his floor. I think he has a very high floor as a two-way centerman. I don't know if there's truly elite offensive upside there, but I do like his two-way play, and that does give him a pretty solid floor as if not a top six, then at least a middle six as a middle six centerman. For me, upside wise, I think he could be a good number two. I think his low end would be as a good number three. I don't think I see a number one center here if we're talking a cup-winning team. I think if he does develop into a number one center, then maybe that means we're counting 32 number one centers in the league. Could he be one of the top 32 centers in the league one day? Yeah, maybe he could, and by that definition, that would make him a number one. But if we're talking a cup winner, I don't project him in that realm of a Kopitar or a Crosby or a McKinnon. I think he's just a hair below that. But I do think he could be, if he hits his upside, he could be a pretty valuable number two on a really good team. And you know, someone that has some versatility in his game because he does have that defensive aspect in his play. And he's not just a point getter. He'll be able to help you win even if he's not putting up numbers. So because he doesn't project as a true number one, that's why you didn't see him in my top 10 that we just covered. I have him just outside. He's in that 11 to 15 range for me. I wouldn't drop him really below 15, but I at this point, I don't think for me he's gonna find his way into my personal top 10. But I do like him. I do like him as a two-way centerman. If he's a little bit bigger, if he's 6'2", maybe you consider it more. But I do think if you're going to be a number one center, it's real tough to be small and do it. There are guys who, I mean, Great point. He played that role on a cup winning team. He's not the biggest, so it can be done. But I really like him in the top 15 as a two-way center with a high floor and some decent upside as well.
Okay. You might be muted there, Shane. No? Okay.
Better?
There we go.
All right. Grant, did you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, just sorry. We have a stranger in the house here.
Oh.
And Chester, when he's in the, he comes in and he just barks. So we tried it a couple times here and I thought I was muted, but obviously not.
I was wondering what the hell you were talking about.
Didn't mean to interrupt your beautiful description there.
Great.
Yeah, Hellenius is. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he went in the top 10. You know, he's probably an 8 to 14 somewhere in there is likely where he goes. So that's a heck of a prospect, right? So
certainly.
And I mean. He's almost a point per game in the playoffs so far. And, you know, you listed those guys, not too many of them. Barkov had 5 assists in 5 playoff games. Laine was 15 points in 18 playoff games. But not many draft-eligible Finns score a point per game in the playoffs. And if he ends up, like he had 3 assists last game, if he ends up being a point per game guy, the playoffs and takes them to a, you know, to a championship, you never know, he might end up climbing the charts again and be top 5 again like he was on a lot of lists early in the year. So
he should have had 6 points there in that game, not just the 3.
Yeah, so I mean he's a darn good prospect. So
the only thing not to like about him really is that he's 5'11", honestly.
Yeah, well, somebody's going to get a really good player in the top 15 somewhere.
That's it. What'd you call it, Grant? Rocco's ringer?
Yes, sir.
All right. So Konsta Hellenius is Rocco's ringer this week. Again, it's we can't call him a riser because he's been up the rankings the whole year. So
yeah,
Rocco's ringer will roll with that. Now, Grant, I'm not saying Grant's grower. We're not doing that this week, okay? It's Grant's prospect of the week. We're not using grower anymore. This week, you'd like to highlight Mr. Melvin Fernström. Let's have a look.
Yeah. Not your typical Swedish first name, Melvin, I don't think. I highlighted his goals over the last 21 games. He's had 19 of them, which is quite notable. So I thought we'd give him a little love here. Oscar Voile, it was the other possibility because he's had 30 points in his last 12 games, if you can believe it. But I did feature him earlier in the year. Remember trying to pronounce his name there, Shane? Both of us?
Unfortunately, yeah.
So we went with Melvin Fernström, who is, I think he's projected to go likely somewhere between 50 and 70. I mean, he had a hat trick in the playoffs the other day, and you can see by these highlights that he's got a great shot. He gets, you know, he likes to go to the scoring areas, has a good one-timer, really good, accurate, quick shot, that's going to get him goals, as you can see by these. Now, he's got a great finishing touch, and he's very smart. He knows how to get open, beats goalies with that accurate, smooth one-timer. He's got a decent skill level, always seems to be around the puck. So you have to like his hockey IQ. He first caught my attention at Hlinka in the summer, and in every event that I've watched, he's produced and created offense. So I suspect that if he's still on the draft board by late in the second round, teams are going to have to start to seriously consider him as he led the Swedish junior in goals as a draft eligible with 31 and was third in league scoring. So, you know, if he's still there at 60, I don't see how you can't be considering this guy, because who knows, he puts his game together and he might be a second certainly a middle line winger. So I guess the knock is that he's maybe a little undersized and not known to be overly physical. So that might be what drops him out of the top 60. And, you know, I queried a couple of scouts before, mentioned to him that he had scored 19 goals in 21 games, and that doesn't seem to matter too much for him. Oh, he's not that gritty, you know. He's not that big, not that gritty. And if you're a little undersized and that's the scouts have that knock on you, it's tough to get into a draft, into a top 50 list, no matter how many points you put up, because it's got to translate to the NHL game, right? But you can't deny his production and his ability to create offense. So I think if he's there in the third round, I mean, I'd be certainly recommending him as a pick. And I think he'd be a terrific third round pick and bring a great draft value. So likely goes 50 to 70. If he keeps on, a friggin' goal a game in his last 21 almost. And if he keeps it up in the playoffs, maybe he does move up into the top 50 range. You can't deny his production and his skills. So I think he's an interesting guy to keep an eye on. There's a couple other Swedish wingers that are forwards that are a little more valued at this point, but I think he's one of the top three or four Swedish wingers for this draft class.
What's his height listed at?
I think he's listed at 6 foot.
At 6 foot.
Yeah. He doesn't look undersized, really, you know?
No. Maybe underweight? Does he need to put on muscle?
Well, you know, I mean, if you're under 6'1", you're considered undersized.
I need to give you a name, Grant, who went in the fourth round, I think, last year. And just from the highlights, I might be way off because I haven't seen, you know, I just saw the highlights. But just the way he kind of slides open and shoots the puck, looks like almost a little bit bigger. Pinelli in Ottawa, who went to Columbus, I think, in the fourth round.
Oh, this kid can snipe. So,
but so I mean, so if he's, so if yeah. he's, Pinelli was 5'8", 5'9", this guy's 6 foot version of that. He went in the fourth. You know, you're looking at a second or third round guy with that kind of shot. You know what I mean? And he's not that small.
No. I'm tempted to move him into the top 50. If he keeps producing and impressing like he has been, I agree. The guys I'm talking to aren't seeing him. They aren't seeing these highlights and these goals and these games. They've seen them at U18 events, and a lot will depend on the season ending U18s, right? That's if he has a great one.
Yeah.
If he has a great one, I don't see how teams can't be considering him in the top 50.
That tournament gives a lot of clarity on the Euros, especially.
Yeah.
Too bad we can't see Russians, but that's another story. We're not going to get into that one.
no politics on the hockey pod.
No, sir. It's strictly prospects over here. Rocco, we're going to talk Habs, so we're going to save you that pain. Thank you for your time, my man. Always appreciate your insight. See you next week.
Right on, guys. Thanks.
Take care. All right. Fantastic. Let's get to our Habs prospect of the week. And you know it had to be him, right? The spectacular saves leading Boston College to some pretty big victories. So Jacob Fowler is our Habs prospect of the week. Let's have a look.
It could easily have been Kapanen again. He has been just lights out, but I had him last week. So now we've got Teddy at the door that he got left in and he's barking. So anyway, whatever. Sorry, folks, we got to put up with it. He saved 68 of 71 last weekend in leading Boston College to its first Hockey East title since 2012. So that's a .958 save percentage. Not bad. He has a 29-5-1 record, giving him the most wins by four in all of college hockey, and wow, easily the best win percentage in college hockey at 842. He wins 84% of the games that he starts. Those are Ken Dryden type numbers, and that's all as a freshman. So I like his chances of winning the Mike Richter Award as the NCAA's outstanding goalie. And if he does that, he'd be the second Habs goalie to win the award in the past 6 years. A fella named Caden Primo won it in 2018-19. So that's kind of cool. And Dobish, as we know, was in the running last year too. So, you know, they've had three terrific college goalies over the past 6 years. This is the big saves that he made versus BU in the 6-2 win. Now, it was the championship game. Here's the one. That's the one that everybody – that's the save, I mean, not only of the year. That might be the save of the decade. Like, check this out.
It's with the blocker too. Like,
yeah.
Oh.
Like, that was just incredible. Like, people talked about last year but didn't have much athletic ability. Well,
yeah,
that's personification of athletic ability right there. That was just a fantastic save. But it shows you his competitiveness, you know. You might think you have him beat and you don't. So, I mean, Celebrini had 8 shots in this game.
Wow.
And that's the top sniper in you know, first overall pick to be. And Celebrini, yeah, I know he got one at the end there, right? He scored one goal, but I don't know. His shooting percentage is better than 12.5%. You know, Fowler got the better of him, even if he did score one goal. So, I mean, he's got outstanding positioning. He tracks the pucks well. He makes several outstanding pad saves in that game. His technique is very sound. I mean, what's there not to like about him? Third-round pick. I think it's safe to say that he should have been a second-rounder at the very least in the draft. So Montreal may have traded away 2 picks for Newhook, you know, late first and early second. Just think of him as, you know, full value with that second, early second-round pick. You know, if you redid a redraft today, you'd be picking him with one of those 2 picks that absolutely, that they traded Newhook for. So smart management again by the Canadians. And, you know, Dobish is looking good. Fowler's looking great. Primo stepped up this year. Volokhin, you can't argue with his numbers in Russian hockey. So
yeah,
there's 4 good, promising young goaltenders to go along with Montembeau, who's in his prime. So
that's good.
Sorry, how do you pronounce that?
Samuel Montembeau.
Montembeau. Okay.
Montembeau.
Well, yeah. Montembeau, you know, he's defied the odds too, right?
Absolutely.
I like to call him Monty.
I'm sure his teammates call him that. So, yeah. I feel like he doesn't mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. So, Monty, you know, there's five good goalies in the system. Safe to say they're not going to have to use a high pick on a goalie this year. So, stock up on other positions and just keep filling that prospect cupboard.
Absolutely. It's already pretty full, but it can always get fuller. That's great stuff, Grant. Jacob Fowler, he's amazing. And, you know, we had Jeff Gorton on the eye test with Pierre Maguire and Jimmy Murphy recently, and he only had good things to say about him. It seems that management noticed as well, right? They're very impressed with the progression and what he could become. But it's really, like, it's what's in here and what's in here that shines the most with Jacob Fowler, right? He's so cerebral and he's got that passion. He's got that fire. He wants to win. He will stop at nothing to stop the pucks. And what more could you ask of a goaltender, right? At that point, like, the only thing you could ask more is that he'd be like 7 foot tall and 300 pounds and covers the entire net. But that doesn't happen. So with Jacob Fowler, I think the Habs got a really good one there, especially in the third round. fantastic value. Cannot complain there. And that'll about wrap up our show today. Went a bit longer, but I think it was worth it. We covered a lot of ground, a lot of good stuff. Grant and Rocco shared their mock top 10s for this upcoming draft. Again, subject to change, right? But as it stands, as of late March, that's what it's looking like. Let us know in the comments what you think of those mock top 10s. And Grant and I will be at the Laval Rocket game tomorrow night, Friday, March 29th, against Belleville. Okay, we'll be with Tony. If you happen to see us, say hi. We don't bite, right? We love to have a chat, but we're going to get to watch David Reinbacher play his first home game in the AHL tomorrow, which we're pretty excited about. It's going to be a fun night for sure. Grant, I'll leave you the parting remarks as always.
Yeah. Well, Tina's in the backyard with the dogs, and she wants to come in the house, so I have nothing to add.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, we thank you all for tuning in. As always, go check out recruits.ca for all your draft and Habs coverage. And until then, we'll see you next week.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast, Recruits Draftcast on YouTube, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts.